80 million people, maybe you were one of them, a record-breaking 80 million people are said to have watched last night's debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So there's a lot of talking now about who won and what it means, and I want you to be smarter than the spin with our guests, because we have a couple of actual experts in a couple of different ways. Associate Professor of History at the University of Washington, Margaret O'Meara. Nice to see you again, Prof.
Nice to see you.
Author of Pivotal Tuesdays, Four Elections That Shaped the 20th Century. And Scott McClellan is the former press secretary for President George W. Bush, and now he's vice president of communications and marketing at Seattle U. Scott McClellan, great to talk to you.
Glad to be on with you all.
Now, our listeners might want to know right off the top, before they listen to your expertise, they might want to know, who are they voting for? Are you out about who you're voting, Scott McClellan?
No, I made a decision early on, way before, back in the primaries, that I wasn't going to state my opinion publicly in this race, although I did express a lot of admiration for John Kasich in the primary.
But don't your Republican colleagues, former colleagues, want you to just come out and publicly support the nominee?
Well, I'm more independent-minded these days, and I'll vote for the person who I think will be the best one for the next 4 years in the end, but I've decided to keep that to myself.
Husky Professor Margaret O'Meara, who are you voting for?
I'm also going to keep that to myself.
Okay.
But I think it's interesting that even in this very polarized race, where you still have a lot of people who have not publicly declared for one candidate or the other, and it's not just a matter of do they feel passionate about a particular candidate, but given the likability ratings of both of these candidates, who can they bear to vote for?
Okay. Despite your personal opinions, can you be independent for the next few minutes about what happened last night?
Absolutely.
Okay. And I got a nod from Professor O'Meara. Okay, so my daughter last night, my six-year-old scattered pretty fast, but my nine-year-old hung in there and watched a lot of the debate. But a few minutes in, she turned to me and said, "Dad, is there going to be a winner?" I mean, she's seen Seahawks games. She just wants to know, is there going to be a winner or not? And so then I had to explain to her, you know, what that's like, how we all judge for ourselves. And yet, after the debate, I went online trying to figure out who says who won. So I'll ask you that at the top. Professor O'Meara, who won?
Well, the irony of trying to figure out who won is that the whole purpose, the reason these debates were created in the modern era in the first place, was to have a discussion of issues rather than a football game or
yes.
One who lost. And what
I'm not proud of myself for wanting to know who won. I'm just being honest with
you. It's human instinct. And we do all, and that's often how the American public remembers the debates. Even if you watch all 90 minutes, you look at the post-game spin and what were the biggest zingers. And when you look at historical debates, you think about those one-liners, those famous one-liners dropped, "You're no Jack Kennedy," or "I'm not going to disparage my opponent's youth and inexperience," as Ronald Reagan famously said about Walter Mondale in 84.
So you're not going to tell me who won either, right? You're too even-handed?
We'll
talk more. We'll get into the specifics. We'll talk more. Scott McClellan, did you in your mind say, he won, she won?
I think Hillary Clinton did far better in this debate. She showed she was prepared, and the things you look at, I think they were just touched on there. You look at what are the defining moments of the debate, and for Trump, it became about his tax returns and about the birther issue, and those didn't help him. I mean, his convoluted answers were not helpful. He should have been prepared for those. He wasn't. He missed a lot of opportunities to try to seize around cybersecurity and bringing up Clinton's emails. Certainly, when you look at the other two big things you're looking at Hillary Clinton and the challenges she has around trust and integrity with voters. Did she show humility and sincerity? And I think she did about as well as she could have there. And then with Donald Trump, it's more about showing that he is up to the job during a time of crisis, especially because just about every crisis is going to come your way. And he didn't do well in that regard, but I don't think he hurt himself irreversibly in any way, and he certainly lived to play another day for another debate, if you will. But when it comes to the issues of likability and defining the differences on the issues, he missed a lot of opportunities there.
Oh, so much more to say about both of those points. Professor Margaret O'Meara, do you want to pick out any moments in the debate that you found illuminating?
Yeah, I found illuminating, you know, there's so much that's new about this election, right? We have the first female nominee of a major party. We have Donald Trump, who's throwing a lot of the rule book out the window and from debates and everything else. But there were some really classic themes that were raised last night that both candidates were trying to identify with that we've seen in almost every electoral contest since the very beginning. The big theme of populism, you know, I'm a candidate for you, the ordinary person. I'm going to work against these powerful interests to support your interests. And you could see in what Hillary Clinton was doing, this is part of what she needed to do last night, was to really identify with, to reach out to those voters who were gravitating towards Donald Trump, as well as to the independent candidates, to say, look, I'm going to fight for you. And Donald Trump is not the populist he's pretending to be.
And did you think she made that case well enough?
I think she did it pretty effectively in the form of the debate. I think there's a, you know, there's such larger noise around both candidates that, you know, one debate's not going to make the difference. But she did get some, make some good points in there. And clearly, you know, that's a powerful theme because it works again and again. It resonates with voters from cycle, every cycle, both parties try to appeal to that.
Scott, I want to ask you about this idea of Trump as fat cat. Here's a little audio, and I want your reaction.
Donald was one of the people who rooted for the housing crisis. He said back in 2006, gee, I hope it does collapse because then I can go in and buy some and make some money. Well, it did collapse.
That's called business, by the way.
9 million people. 9 million people lost their jobs. 5 million people lost their homes. And $13 trillion in family wealth was wiped out.
Former Bush Press Secretary Scott McClellan, how do we know that voters don't admire a businessman who saw a housing crash buying opportunity and a man who avoids taxes like they wish they could avoid taxes?
Well, this is a classic race that's around change, and you've got an outsider, probably the extreme outsider, if you will, in some instances, versus the ultimate insider, someone who's been in there a long time. And early on in the debate, Trump was very effective in pointing out politician and railing against the system and being a successful businessman, and that is certainly a way to turn it back towards what will be favorable to him with those undecided voters. But he's also got to show that likability factor and show that he can be trusted, assure those voters, those undecided voters, which is a very high number right now, around 18%, assure them that he is up to the job in those moments of crisis and that they're willing to turn the keys of the White House over to him. And he did not accomplish that last night. That's a high hurdle to accomplish for him. He didn't lose it, and he didn't lash out overly in the debate, but which is a success for him in that regard. His expectations are so low, but he didn't do himself a lot of good.
You mentioned Trump's likability. Let's listen to this.
I have much better judgment than she does. There's no question about that. I also have a much better temperament than she has. You know, I have a much better. She spent, let me tell you, she spent hundreds of millions of dollars on an advertising, you know, they get Madison Avenue into a room, they put names, oh, temperament, let's go after. I think my strongest asset, maybe by far, is my temperament. I have a winning temperament. I know how to win.
Professor O'Meara, you've studied presidents. What do we know based on their temperament, their, you know, so-and-so smiled, so-and-so interrupted, so-and-so looked frustrated, all that stuff? What does that have to do with governing?
Yeah, that is a perennial theme in debates and in presidential campaigns, frankly. I mean, for ever since the advent of modern media more than a century ago, it's been a something of a likability contest. And the relationship the American voter has with the person who's running for president or becomes their president has become a very emotional and emotionally fraught one. This was not a debate that was heavy on issues, and presidential debates really haven't been. They have been these debates about temperament, and it's an opportunity for candidates to present themselves to either shift the narrative about them, to try and convince people, I'm not really what you think I am. Ronald Reagan, again, in 1980, the rap on him was he was a lightweight. He wasn't going to be qualified to be president. He comes into his first one-on-one debate with Carter and really disarms people as someone who's charming and who they think, I could vote for this guy. But the other thing, you know, what often happens is that debates don't change minds more often. They just reinforce narratives that a candidate is, you know, Al Gore is stiff, that Dukakis is sort of this cold technocrat, that it's hard for candidates to use the debate format to dramatically change ideas about whether people like them or trust them or not.
Yeah, we just get a video clip that we can now point to that proves the thing we already thought in the first place. Well, Scott McClellan, you were in the inner circle of the George W. Bush White House. I'll ask you as well. We're talking so much about atmospherics and optics, but do you think that debates actually, let's take this one, does it tell us anything important when it comes to how the president will actually govern?
Well, I think there are two things you have to look at with the debates. Did the debate shift the dynamic of the race in any way? And you'll look at the polls to see that. It's not clear, probably not. Debates, as was mentioned, typically do not shift the dynamic of the race that much. But this is a very close race heading into the debate. It was virtually tied, Hillary Clinton slightly up, but her continued weakness has been bringing her down of late. Did she reverse that? But then you go to the living room test. Who can you live with watching on your TV in your living room for the next 4 years? And that becomes the likability factor. And I don't think Trump helped himself last night, and he had the opportunity to do that. I think Clinton probably helped herself, but I'm not sure that it shifted the dynamic of the race much. We'll learn more about that by the weekend or by Sunday or so when we see where the debates settle in post this first debate. So the next two debates will be other important moments as well.
Here's an example of what I'm asking about when I ask about what does the debate have to do with governing. A conventional wisdom that we have is that did she get under his skin? You know, the Clinton's running mate said that he got rattled. This shows that Trump gets rattled. You, as I said, were in the inner circle as the press secretary for George W. Bush. Does it matter? There's this conventional wisdom that, for example, well, how do you think this president would react to a world leader if they get frustrated on a debate stage? I just want to know, is there truth to that? Is there actually something that a debate tells us that that's important about how this president would be with a world leader or when it comes to decision making or knocking heads in Congress?
Well, in Trump's case, absolutely. I mean, because that's the big question about Trump is, do you trust this guy to be able to do the job, and particularly when he's in a time of crisis? And, you know, he didn't lose it last night, but he did come across as defensive and a bit thin-skinned at times. And so that's why I was making the point that those moments did not help him. And that was kind of throughout the debate, at least after the first 20 minutes or so. He probably wishes that the debate had ended at 20 minutes because he would have done better than Hillary Clinton by that point.
Now, when it comes to the spin, so now the candidates and their surrogates all fan out and tell the media how great their candidate did or whatever the spin is. Will you make us listeners smarter than the spin? Is there something you can tell us? Because you know this game, you know how it works. This is what people will say. This is what you should know. Professor O'Meara?
So the spin, the post-debate spin, is almost and sometimes even more important than what happens in the debate itself when it comes to the larger historical import of these events and how they affect the race. And we can go all the way back to the first great debates, 1858, the Lincoln-Douglas debates weren't even presidential debates. It was the Senate race in Illinois in the backwoods. Now, this is, you know, if Abe Lincoln were president in the age of television or even radio, he wouldn't have been very successful. This is a very awkward looking guy. He had a high, squeaky voice. But the important thing about those debates is that the transcript of what they said was reprinted in the Eastern newspapers after the debates and circulated, and it made Lincoln's reputation. It wasn't how he said it. It was just his words on the paper. So this was perhaps the first example of post-debate spin. And we've had
the transcript was the spin.
The transcript was the spin, and it was, you know, it was out in the mass media, and people consumed it, and they're like, this guy has leadership qualities. He's, you know, it made his reputation.
Scott McClellan, former press secretary, what can you tell us now that makes us smarter than the spin that we're hearing and will hear in coming days?
Well, it's important for the candidates, besides the likability factor and coming across as someone you can live with for the next 4 years, to really define the differences on the issues. And Trump last night did a fair job highlighting problems, but voters want to hear about solutions. Hillary Clinton was offering solutions and showing how she would fix the issues that need to be addressed. Donald Trump, for most of the debate, offered very few solutions and just went back to his usual points about the problems. And voters want to hear more about your agenda and what you're going to accomplish for them. So for the next debate, he needs to prepare better. He needs to come forward with the solutions that he has. And he needs to also work to interject himself in a way that puts her on the defensive, not himself, by changing the issues back on some of her weaknesses.
Why did you get more independent since you left the Bush White House, Scott? Or were you always more independent than we
thought?
Well,
I grew up in public service, about, you know, around politics and public service, about the importance of working across the aisle and making a difference. And I'm concerned about some of the direction the country has gone and how polarized it's become. And I believe it's important to be able to unite the country around common issues that we all share.
You got a big nod of agreement there from our guest, Professor Margaret O'Meara.
That's right. We are in an incredibly polarized moment. I would hesitate to say it's the most polarized or partisan moment in American history. We've had a lot of them. But at the end of the day, you know, what really wins elections is hope. And to sort of paraphrase Hillary Clinton's husband, Bill Clinton's slogan, you know, vote hope in 92. But both Republicans and Democrats at various times have won the White House on these optimistic messages. And they don't necessarily have to be messages full of substance. That we criticize, you know, look, debates are not a time when you sort of air new policy proposals in depth, right? And there wasn't a lot of detail there. But you dial back to earlier elections and candidates like Franklin Roosevelt in 1932, he didn't have a lot of details either, but he spoke a language of hope. Ronald Reagan spoke a language of hope and optimism in 1980, and it was enough for both men and others to win.
Margaret O'Meara is the author of Pivotal Tuesdays, Four Elections That Shaped the 20th Century, and she teaches history at the University of Washington. And Scott McClellan was George W. Bush's press secretary, now vice president of communications and marketing at Seattle U. Thanks to both of us for thanks to both of you for smartening us up about the debate. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bill and Margaret.
Thanks.
It's KUOW's The Record.